Welcome to Heavy Networking. This is a Packet Pushers podcast. That's right. We've been doing this for years and years now, bringing you the very best in networking, the networking industry, and what's going on. And today, a network automation discussion with our sponsor, Cumulus Networks. Now, Greg, this was an interesting discussion in that it got down to network automation, not just, oh, click some things and magic happens, but it was more about process. It was more about, you know, workflow and actually delivering a result using a cohesive system.
Yeah, you and I have talked a lot, and I have this view that I tell anybody who sits down long enough to listen that the idea of artisanally crafting an automation script using Ansible or Python was a good idea 5 years ago, 3 years ago. But now it's starting to get to the point where maintaining that code, sustaining that effort is getting more and more difficult as time goes by. And what Cumulus has done is said, well, why don't we start bringing together the learnings that they've got from the field and put them into a project, which you can find on GitHub. Anybody can join in, and they're calling it production ready automation. And I think this is a pretty good way to shortcut some of the code. So you can still see the Ansible stuff. You can still do the Python stuff for the bits, but you're going to get some core of the system that you need to build to do automation at scale, at complexity as you evolve, is going to be all there ready to go for you. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, and even if you're not a Cumulus customer, you can use production-ready automation. We're going to talk about this at some length in the show to set up how you would do automation in your networks. There's a lot of value there that Cumulus is releasing. So please enjoy the show. Our guest today, Pete Lumbus, Director of Technical Marketing, and Rama Darba, Director of Services, both at Cumulus Networks. With us today, Pete Lumbus and Rama Darba of Cumulus Networks. So Pete, starting with you, I think we need to level set here before we get into this conversation by talking about the state of network automation, which feels like one of those questions we seem to ask like every, I don't know, 3 weeks or so. But it does really set up the conversation we're about to have here. So from your perspective, give us that state of network automation.
Yeah. When we look at network automation, I think it's very clear that we see Ansible as kind of the de facto standard there. You know, there's a couple of other tools. There's Chef and Puppet that have been around for a long time. We're seeing some interest in Salt, and it's kind of growing. But Ansible, really, from both a company focusing on network automation, has grown a lot. We see a lot of the vendors embrace it. It works well with the legacy network devices where you can just push commands to it. And I think it fits a lot with the mental model that network engineers have of pushing those commands as opposed to having an agent fetch things. And so from a kind of a software perspective, we're seeing Ansible as, like I said, that de facto standard. But overall in the industry, I think there's still a lot of challenge on the like, okay, I want to do network automation, but I don't know what I want to do. And it seems like a lot of it is like step one, draw two circles, step two, draw the rest of the owl kind of setups.
See, I like to refer to traditional networking, or not as legacy networking. And at one time I used to call it legendary networking. Now I call it heritage networking, or, you know, because it's really becoming like the CLI isn't going to go away. It's like a listed building on that side of town that everybody goes to look at and say, oh, you really knew how to make it in the old days.
You know, that actually makes a lot of sense, because you have to go through the same permitting process to make any changes to your network.
So heritage networking is, you know, with the CLI and all that process. And I think it's a shame that people are sort of, you know, taking what I call the artisanal Ansible approach, you know, the hand carving and Ansible scripts, and then using some Python to lovingly create the lacquered around the outside of it. But really... and that's fine insofar as it automates the way that it was going. It's a bit like a Rube Goldberg machine, because really all you're doing is taking the CLI and making it run a bit better. You're not actually transforming the way the network automation goes, in my mind. You're sort of, you know, it's a bit like the difference between a bicycle and a motorbike. You put a better engine in, but you're still on two wheels, not four.
Yeah, and I think if we look at a lot of the automation examples that are out there, or what folks are doing to automate those heritage networks, it's... you know, it's duct tape and super glue upon layers of duct tape and super glue. And so it's like, look, I can use Ansible. It's great with this module and TextFSM and Napalm and, you know, all of a sudden you have five or six tools that all are pretty good, but not great, that when working all in conjunction, do the job. And then when they don't work in conjunction, all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is really this is way more complicated than just doing it by hand.
Well, and I think it's also this house of cards, right, Pete? You get this set of dependencies that you build because you're using these different tools. They all work together at that moment in time, and then you upgrade something, or then some other variable changes within your environment, and all of a sudden there's a card pulled out of the middle and the whole house of cards falls down.
Exactly. And I think it's one of those things that ends up being a barrier to entry for network automation for a lot of folks is, hey, it worked, and then I walked away for a week, and now nothing works, and it's going to take me more time to untangle that than to just do the thing manually. And so it's, you know, friction upon friction upon friction.
Well, so is this a snowflake architecture problem?
I think it's part of that, but I also think that it's just a minimal viable product problem. I think if you look at a lot of the vendors that are out there, what they've done to quote unquote embrace automation has been to do what is the littlest amount of work possible to do that. I think it's been great to see some of the community step up. I think, again, some of the work done in Napalm, the folks at Network Decode have done some great things to build some tooling. But when you're a third party building on top of a closed system, you can only do so much. And I think that's one of the big reasons why you see it so much more complicated in networking than in, say, system spaces.
I think also we have to recognize that networks are not a single device. So using Ansible to automate a network that's just switching and routing in the data center is actually quite practical. And it's a problem that can be, you know, reasonably solved by a couple of engineers on the in their spare time, effectively, or in the, you know, when business is quiet. When you start getting to applying Ansible to three or four different types of firewalls and some virtual switching, and you want to do some integration with some containers, then it starts to get impractical, I think. And that idea of artisanal scripting starts to fall apart pretty quickly as well. And you really need something that really amps up the automation to a new level, something up towards orchestration.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a space where, number one, if you look at kind of the pull-based model of, say, a Puppet or a Chef, one of the challenges there is that you have an eventually consistent system. So Puppet and Chef are eventually consistent. They will eventually pull down the right configuration and make the system where it's supposed to be, trying to configure an eventually consistent system, right? So I want to eventually get my OSPF config that eventually makes OSPF converge. And that double layering becomes really complicated and weird. I think that's problem number one. But problem number two is exactly what you highlighted, Greg, which is there are six different systems with six different ideas and six different needs. And they all kind of have that same kind of hard candy shell on the outside that you have to pierce to be able to automate it all. And that just, again, it just continues to amplify the complexity. It creates more and more friction along the way.
How do you deal with these shortcomings, though, Pete? Because the challenge that I'm seeing as I look at all of this is there is no standard way to deal with this. It's more of a reactionary thing. You start small with your, Greg, like you were saying, the artisanal Ansible and some Python scripts that kind of solve a thing. And then you're like, oh, well, I need to do more than that now. And you kind of have to rethink your approach. And then you do something else. And then there's a problem there. And it's this, you didn't just like, it's like a moving target you're constantly chasing, trying to figure out how to put this whole thing together. I don't know how you address all of those issues at once. Is there like an approach you take or something to make it all happen?
I think the first part is just trying to slice and dice it into, you know, components. This is every system on the planet works like this, right? You don't build one giant monolith. You want to build a component of a monolith or a function or, you know, a box, and then figure out how to bolt that box onto the next box over. And so I think for us, what we've looked at is, okay, well, let's focus on a data center. Let's focus on a spine and leaf topology, and let's focus on how to build that in a scalable, repeatable way with inheritable, testable best practices. You know, so for example, let's build a topology and then have that topology automatically inherited by an eBPN set of configurations or a BGP set of configurations or whatever that is. And again, make sure that all of that is inherited and not, you know, discreetly maintained across those components. So trying to do that's kind of number one is focusing on a specific problem space. But number two is trying to focus on getting the right tooling. And I think Cumulus has some advantage there because of its ability to do native Linux. The fact that it is native Linux, we can just use those regular off-the-shelf Ansible modules. You know, we don't need a bunch of extra layers of makeup and paint to make it work.
Yeah. And getting to kind of what you're saying, Ethan, I think Pete touched on some really critical components there. Looking at it from the, say you're, this is a project that you're starting from scratch, right? Like how do you slice and dice it, as Pete said? One of the key elements that you can, you really need to think about is that if you start an automation project from, say, a scratch position, there's going to be four things generally that you're always going to have to figure out. And those become kind of the fundamentals of what your automation journey is going to look like, right? And those four things tend to be the data structures in which you house what the definition of your deployment is going to look like and what the scope of that is going to look like. Kind of the tool which is associated with the tasks of the automation. So in this case, you know, we lean into Ansible, and then the order of which tasks you use. So is your target going to be driving CLI? Is your target, like Pete said, going to be something more intuitive and native to Linux? The third one is going to be, what are you going to actually turn into variables, right? And I use a word that doesn't really exist in the lexicon, variableize, right? Like there's certain components that you're going to decide. And getting back to what you said, Greg, like is going to be part of this customized script, and which ones you're going to just hard code and commit to. And then the last is really just scope. How much intelligence do you want this to have? Do you want this to be able to dynamically interact with your container network? You want it to react to, like, based on monitoring data, et cetera. But regardless of, you know, how deep you go into each of those abysses, because each of those is an independent abyss unto itself, you can really, those are the four fundamentals that you really start with. And so no matter how you slice and dice it, those are the four components that you have to kind of sit down with. And really, when we talk to our customers and kind of talk about this over beers even, there's a line in the sand that you draw at some of those points. And you just say, you know what? Yes, absolutely. You know what? I want, in an ideal world, you know, a database that stores all my data, that dynamically reacts to when applications launch, so it can update the database by talking directly to the applications, and then deployed onto a dynamic network that can have that it learns on the fly based on what's cabled using LLDP information. It's multi-vendor. Absolutely. We all want to aspire to that, and it's a journey. But just like Pete said, you got to draw a line in the sand at some point and say, here's how we're going to kind of start. And you kind of base it on the four fundamentals.
Well, I think ultimately it also comes down to how much of this stuff do you want to invent yourself or reinvent? Because most of networking is actually the same thing. It's a bit like people who buying a Lego kit. And sure, every Lego kit is slightly different. And sometimes it looks like a starfighter, and sometimes it looks like an aircraft carrier. But at the end of the day, the blocks inside are all the same. It's just a question of how you put them together. And when I think about software-defined networking and how I'm going to automate or how I'm going to orchestrate, I want most of the work done for me. I don't want to have to go and get, you know, an Ansible and some Python, and then start thinking about what database calls I'm going to make and where my asset database lives. And now I've got NetBox. And I think there's a point at which you start to say, I actually need something where somebody's done the work for me and I can build on top of that. Now, it might be I still need Ansible to do some templating on top of my orchestration engine or my automation engine that I might have bought. But does that make sense? Does that line of thinking make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you captured something that's critical here, which is a lot of people think they need to reinvent the wheel, right? Oh no, that system won't work for me. I'm going to have to write it from scratch. And a lot of, you know, and without naming names, there's a lot of like very large web scaler companies that kind of purport this ideology, right? They write their own TCP stacks. They design their own automation tooling from scratch. But I don't think that's really the right way to do things. I think you captured it the best, where like, it's like Lego, right? Every set uses the same pieces, but it builds something in the outcome that's different. And I think there's so much tooling out there, and we really have to understand automation is new to networking, but it's been done in other places for a really long time. So these tools already exist in a lot of places. Now, the real state of the net, of the environment, like the state of the industry for this, is something Pete said earlier, which is there's no one organization that's really putting it all together in a digestible, open way that works in a user accepted manner. The vast majority of industry vendors are like, oh yeah, we support automation. Go look on this random Git page in like six folders deep about this one module I wrote to let you work with Napalm, right? And that's the standard now. And so if you're trying to
and
get into it,
oh yeah, and is it supported? Oh well, there's a guy who works in somewhere like in the middle of Asia Pacific. He knows something about it, you know.
Yeah,
I think he might have written it, but you know, or something like that. Yeah,
yeah, and he's like a university student working on it as part of his PhD project.
We have that full configuration. I built it once for IETF 4 back in 1973, and it works great. And you can go check it out here.
Yeah.
There's a key difference here, though, in this conversation, or a couple of different major things that we're talking about. One is the kind of tooling we're using and not reinventing tooling. But then there's another point, Pete, that you made earlier, which is automating for a specific result, as in one of the successes that you're going to have with automation is if you standardize some module of your network. You were mentioning data center specifically. Let's pick a data center module. We're going to make it look like this. You're not going to make it look like 15 other things that you might, because you happen to like to spell things in your description field differently. You're going to make it look like this one thing. Then we have a predictable goal, something that we're trying to automate towards. So tooling's an issue, but then the result, the thing you're trying to come up with, is an issue also. And I think both of these points are awfully crucial to if you're trying to get to a point in your automation where you can handle it and it's successful and predictable and repeatable.
Yeah, and it's also just trying to eliminate a lot of the boring stuff that you'll spend a lot of time thinking about, but definitely do not care about. Rama's mentioned the data structures, right? How do I build the variables file for, is an IP address a member of a node or a member of an interface? How do I manage an interface under BGP versus at the global level? These are complicated. I don't want to say complex, but they're complicated things you have to spend a lot of time thinking about. And you're like, wow, yeah. I really do not care about this. Why am I spending so much time on it?
If you pick a source of truth, let's say NetBox, is that immediately sprang to mind as you were talking about those specific relationships, interfaces and versus IP addresses and how those are all intertwined. Well, there is a defined data schema within NetBox that handles those things. And if you can look at it and go, yep, that works for me, I'm going to use that, then you can move on with your life.
Yeah, the value of the kind of good enough 80-90% solution for the thing that provides no value to your deployment, your business, your network, whatever, just go with that and run with it. And I think that's been part of one of our big goals, is saying, look, we can get you anywhere between 80 and 100% of where you're trying to go to. And you know what? Like, tailor the little bits and pieces here on the edge that matter, instead of spending a bunch of time defining that data structure.
Well, let's define us and then what you guys built. So us, I mean, we're talking about Cumulus Networks here. You guys built a thing. What did you build, Pete?
So what we did, Rama and I kind of worked together on this with some folks on our team. We have created something we're calling production ready automation. And the whole idea is that it is production ready, right? It's not a demo. It's not a reference architecture. This is exactly the automation that we're using for our customer deployments in our paid services engagements. And then we've gone and open sourced the whole thing. It's all up on GitLab. But it is Ansible playbooks that today deploy one of three different EVPN networks. And we're going to expand that out to some other things. But the idea being, look, here's the full Ansible. Here's how we configure EVPN. Here's how we do a BGP underlay. Here's how we do an EVPN overlay. Here's our connections for MLAG down to server bonds. Here's how to configure NTP and syslog and all of the boring stuff, so that you can, in theory, just copy and paste and deploy.
All of the boring stuff. I like the way you put that. So effectively, I've got a choice of like three templates based on EVPN. I'm going to take my Cumulus switches. I'm going to cable them up in some predictable, predefined manner. I'm going to aim production ready automation at this, check some boxes and go, kind of like that, or?
Exactly. So, we have a defined topology. There's a diagram on our repo. Look, you could cable it up just like that. I think it's eight, it basically represents eight racks with four spines. That's a pretty good sized network for a lot of small to medium enterprise. You cable it like that and you don't even have to change anything. if you have something bigger, larger, different, now you know exactly what you need to change. Oh, I used port 48 instead of 51. Okay, I'm going to find and replace. But all of the guts, all of the things inside of that all stay the same.
Now, this really looks like this is what Cumulus has been doing with, like, you as professional services engineers at Cumulus working with customers. This looks like something you've taken from what customers are doing and put it together into a package so you don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, and I'll let Rama jump in here in a second. The way I've been describing it is that, you know, we're looking at this as kind of the off-the-rack suit. So you pick it up, you put it on, and if it fits you well, fantastic. Walk out, go, you know, go on your fancy date night. If it doesn't, then Rama, who runs our services organization, you know, he basically has a whole team of bespoke tailors to do as little or as much as you need from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Greg, one of the things you said is, you know, we're learning from customers. One of the things that happened is we started pushing open automation tooling in the networking industry, probably far before the industry was ready for it. We started doing it about 6 years ago because our operating system on Cumulus is a Linux operating system, not Linux-like, not Linux-based, right? So we actually were able to leverage the real power of these automation tools that the server and application people were using for a really long time very early. But the industry wasn't there yet, to be honest with you, right? It was still too full, like 5 years ago, it was too full of unknown unknowns. People didn't even know, when we say things like data structures or tasks or templates, they didn't even know what those meant and how they connected to each other, right? I think I think the industry is way more cognizant and aware of what these terminologies mean and why they care and why they should care, right? And this thing called item potency, which we love chatting about, yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah. That's a quick way to sound important in any meeting. Yeah. Sorry, around the word. Idempotent, exactly. You know.
Exactly. So I want to hesitate to say, like, we're just taking this from a bunch of customer deployments that they've taught us and we're conglomerate. Actually, we were leading the charge in a lot of these engagements with customers that say, I want to automate my network with Cumulus and I don't even know where to start, right? So we've been doing that for about 6 years, right? And then somewhere about 2 years ago, we realized, you know, I think we have enough content and we're starting to see consistency and standardization, not just in automation, but also in protocols, in spine leaf architectures, in applications. Like, all these things have to align before you can kind of create this off the rack style of automation deployments that we're seeing, right? So we started to see that, and we started really investing in trying to create a standardized deployment model based on these learnings that we've been helping guide customers through for the past 6 years, right? And there's certain things that we see on repeat that come up over and over again, right? And we realize, man, those are the, like Pete said earlier, those are the boring things that no one really wants to talk about, right? But you have to, but you have to do that. So why don't we just take care of it in one big go? And instead of having it a big, long conversation that you have to have, why don't we just default it to, here's what it is. If you guys have heartburn about it, we'll talk about it. But otherwise, you know, like, your suit is going to come with two sleeves, a pair of trousers, and, you know, like, two buttons, right? Like,
it's going to be... I think that's really important because I think the secret of networking is everybody's network may be unique, and I'm less convinced of that. And if it was true, because it was truly unique, nobody would ever be able to work on any other network without 6 months to 2 years of training, which is where we were back in the 1970s, right? And so your network is not truly unique, but it is put together differently. And so when products like, you know, tools like this get together and say, this is the best practices from a bunch of different people, and we've assembled, you know, the core of what you need. Now what you need to do is go and, as you say, tailor the suit to fit your operation. I think that's enough. That's the gap between this heritage mode of operation, you know, with this artisanal Ansible handcrafted with some NetBox, which is fine. Absolutely, there's value in that. If you're doing that, I'm not criticizing that. I'm not being negative. But I'm of the view that if you're starting now, you want something that's a step above that. But you may not want to be all the way forward into a full-on orchestration engine, which is trying to do all the things for you. This universal tool, the Swiss Army knife, and that might be too much for your organization. So that's why I like this production-ready kit that you put together, and it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to get started with. Production-ready automation is like I can get going with it. I can have all the fun of playing with Linux, and still not feel like I've had to cough up a whole bunch of money and get a budget for it.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that's important to highlight there, you know, I mean, yes, it's open source. Yes, it's free. But, you know, I think one thing that we've mentioned a couple of times that I think is important to take a beat on is this is living, breathing configurations in automation. You know, it's not just that, hey, we sat down and the brain trust got together and this is what came from the top of the mountains carved into stone. But we are kind of every day that we're working with customers and being like, oh, that thing needs to change, or hey, this could be improved, or you know what, this customer found an edge case that we hadn't thought of. You know, it's not the vendor shall decide. It's about closing the loop from what we've learned and pushing that basically back into the community. So I think just last week, we had a customer who wanted to do some really unique things with Syslog. And we're like, oh yeah, those are great ideas. We hadn't thought about that. We'd never used that as a Syslog collector before. And now it's part of that automation. So if you come and you have anything that resembles those needs, which we didn't think were totally bespoke, they just weren't a problem space we had thought about. It's in there now, and you know, basically hit a button and you can consume that.
Well, Pete, there's a question here where Rama was talking earlier about this and using it in the context of deployment, which kind of sounds like I'm standing up some new racks. I will use this tool once and I will deploy the thing. Well, what about going forward? Like if I have this brilliant idea about Syslog, like you were just describing, is that a change and I can use production ready automation to implement that change too?
Yeah. So, you know, I think if you think about how to consume production ready automation from us, we've seen three models already. The first one is the copy and paste model, right? Or, you know, I think one of our marketing people came up with a copy paste deploy. You know, marketing can come up with some snazzy slogan sometimes.
I was going to say, even a clock can be right twice a day.
Exactly. So I think that's one option. The next option is, look, it's a reference design for you. You either have automation or you're getting started, or you want to kind of check in when there's new versions or we've made new updates to it and just say, what's changed? Does this apply to me? You know, the day we launched, we actually had a couple of customers go, this is amazing. I'm not going to use it because we already have Ansible. But I now have a whole backlog of issues that I just created based on things that I know I can improve. And those are, you know, usually existing Ansible customers. And then the third one is saying, you know, maybe you're a salt shop or you want to get started. And for whatever reason, this doesn't apply. This kind of gives you the painting to look at while you paint your own thing, you know. And just like those painting night things, you get a bottle of wine or, you know, a tall boy and you start... while looking at the prime example to build your own, that looks, you know, 80%
as
good.
Use it as a reference, in other words. I'm not sure all the things I should be thinking about. I'm going to look at PRA and that project and use that as my inspiration and all the good ideas, the things that maybe I didn't know I needed. Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I'm going to add that feature.
Exactly. And then I think the last component here, you know, talking about using this for ongoing maintenance and changes and things like that is that in order to make this scale for us, you know, we're a pretty lean team. And so we wanted to build this from the beginning in a scalable fashion. And when I say scalable, I don't say that like, well, we're going to be Google and you're going to be Google. And so everybody has to build it like Google. I mean, like we're like every other network engineering team. We would love to have three or four more heads. Our, you know, CFO has a very different opinion on that need. So we work with what we've got. And so we've built full automated testing behind it. So every change that goes in, everything that we touch in it launches a full simulation. We actually run full continuous integration tests against everything. All of those tests are available. You can see the results of all of them. And so that's the next piece is that you can actually pull down not just the automated configuration, but you could actually pull down all of our test suites as well and use those same test suites in your environment.
Yeah, you just kind of breezed through that in the same tone of voice, but this is actually a big deal and there should have been like trumpets or something. So what you're saying here is I can model my network virtually, or that's part of how this, what happens here. I'm going to model the network virtually in a lab context, make the change, run a bunch of canned tests that have already been defined for me to validate that my infrastructure with this change is going to be all good. So thumbs up, and then I can deploy to production.
Exactly. And I think you're touching on something there from the simulation perspective. That's just like the automation thing where you can look at Cumulus and another vendor and say, well, you both do Ansible. Like, why do I care? Look, we have a VM. So does everybody else. But it ends up being all of the little details that matter a whole lot and how that's different. And so for us, our VM is free. anybody even without a software license can go and download it and use it. But it's about 768 megs of RAM compared to, you know, the multi-gig boxes. You know, I saw somebody the other day bragging about running, like, getting this huge massive server and running like 20 XRV boxes on it. And I was like, oh my God, that's like a multinational data center worth of QMCMs. So like that's number one. Number two, we don't have interface limits. So look, if you have a 128 port switch, we can build a 128 port VM. And we can actually name those VM interfaces exactly what you're doing in production. So look, if you're using ports 1, 2, 3, 5, and 9, we can rename the VM interfaces 1, 2, 3, 5, and 9. So you build one set of configurations for both virtual and production. And then the third one is, because we're Linux, everything we do starts in the Linux kernel, and then we figure out how to push that into hardware. And that's kind of like what Cumulus provides to our customers when they buy the software and the hardware.
What you're telling me is there's feature parity between on the virtual image with...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So once I pull the hardware out of that and I have just the VM, I'm actually left with the exact same software stack that I have, you know, in my switch with VLANs and VXLANs and ACLs and BGP and L2, and all of it works exactly the same with the exact same configurations.
Yeah, that really is a big deal in that so many of the images that I work with when I'm doing lab work or trying to demonstrate something, the way it works in that virtual image versus how it works in hardware is maybe it's the same, but maybe it's different. Maybe it's different in a major way. Maybe it's different in a subtle way, but you're not getting an exact replica in that lab of what you're doing in hardware. Most of the time, maybe that isn't such a big deal. It's more of a nuisance. Sometimes it can be a really big deal. And so, Pete, the point you're making here about what you're getting in a virtual Cumulus lab being feature parity, working the same way, right down to being able to rename interfaces, takes a lot of those nuisances that you would typically get and shoves them off to the side.
Exactly. And I think Rama can probably provide a little more color here. But, you know, even before we started doing this production-ready automation stuff, you know, one of our motivations is every time we would have an engagement with a customer, a paid engagement, you know, they would sign, you know, the contract on day one, and we're waiting for the hardware to show up in the next 6 weeks. The afternoon of day one, Rama's team is out there building that virtual replica of exactly what they're going to deploy when their hardware gets there. They're building all the Ansible against it. They're deploying it, validating it, making sure it all works in that simulated environment. And then when the hardware shows up, you know, instead of spending 2 weeks, they spend maybe a day to push the automation and then catch the nits. There's always going to be something. I'm not going to pretend like every VM is going to be 100% replica, but, you know, living in the high 80% replica is going to be way better than living in the low 30%.
So Greg and Pete, you were actually talking about this and at the start of this session, right? Once you start getting into automation, you start to realize that there's a lot of adjacent technologies that really can be part of this automation umbrella. And getting back to kind of what your original question was here, Ethan, like what is the state of network automation? It's understanding that you can't talk about automation anymore in a vacuum. If you're talking automation, you are also talking simulation, and you're also talking automated testing, which is also known as CI, right? Continuous integration. And without those two components, it's like the equivalent of kind of coding a application or a piece of code without a compiler or without like a dev network. You can hope it works in prod, but you have nowhere to test it and validate it. So exactly like Pete said, when we go into these customer environments and they started at day zero saying, we want to go automation, but we don't know where to start, and we build everything for them, instead of just building the code and then just sitting around waiting until things show up and are cabled, we're able to actually use simulations, which is, you know, actual one-to-one replicas of what the network operating system would be in production, but in a virtual machine environment, cabled up virtually exactly the way you expect, as in prod, and you deploy all your configs onto there. And that not only gives us way more confidence, but in the deployment that's going to show up when we actually have the physical gear arrive on site, but it also allows us to be way more productive with our time rather than just kind of sitting around waiting until gear shows up, which I think is the real saving grace here. I remember doing a multi generational deployment, right? Like Greg was saying earlier, some part of the network was heritage and some part of the network was modern, right? Mm. The heritage network was basically written up by hand by one node at a time by a network engineer that was basically trawling through user docs and pulling out relevant configs and then hoping they're going to work when the devices arrive on site.
And the pipeline, the CI/CD pipeline was right. The engineer, right? Because you had
exactly.
And it was also back in the day when there was like, you know, I remember working on networks and just memorizing all the IP addresses of the devices. Well, that was fine when there was 50 or 100 devices in the network. And really you only needed to know like 30 or 40 IP addresses to know the bits that you use, you know, like the firewall and the core routers and the spanning tree switches, you know, that sort of stuff. But now it's all different because you've got virtual switches, you've got virtual firewalls, virtual load balancers, physical firewalls. You've got physical firewalls with virtual firewalls inside them. It's just so much more networking that it's so much more complex now.
And I think if you look back what it wasn't CI/CD, it was CECG, which was call Ethan or call Greg.
Too that's true.
Accurate. But certified. True. Certified.
And you're absolutely right. Like you put the config in and then you run a series of manually run show commands and you're like, I think it's up. Right. And then you sit around and you wait until some application person contacts you and be like, this is slow or my application won't launch, right? Or my database replications don't work, right? And then you go digging into, well, did the config I put in, is that correct? Right. Because it was very reactive. Now I think Ethan was saying it earlier, we might have glossed over a part of this, which is really, really critical, which is one of the hardest parts in this automation journey is the testing, right? How do you make sure that if I'm touching 100 switches, that all the configs to all my switches went correctly and that the system, the aggregate system that I deployed is working the way that I expect, right? And really the best way to do that is through automated testing, but that can be an entire job unto itself, right? Like, that can be so daunting that a lot of people won't even start automation to begin with. It's like driving a car without a fuel gauge or a speedometer, right? Like, yeah, I could drive it, but I'm going to get pulled over all the time and run out of gas everywhere because I don't know like how the system is performing, right? And I think the one of the big elements of this production-ready automation component that we built together is not only does it purport to do what you want to accomplish with automation, but it also has an entire suite of tests and results and reports that you can just literally off the rack take and implement in your environment, which is, again, compartmentalized. So you don't have to take the automation. You just take the test scripts if you wanted to and apply it to your customized automation. And it will validate that it's doing what you expect it to do, right? And I think that's a huge part of any automation journey that I think that a lot of people don't know they need until they start the journey.
Yeah, the validation part is overlooked a lot. And I think part of that is framing in the modern automation discussion, because all of a sudden we're talking about unit tests and putting in, how do you write these tests? What are the tests that we're supposed to write? What's the mechanism that's going to do the testing for me? And I think it's getting a lot of folks hung up, especially if we're used to being the kind of folks who are writing a change and then kind of mentally knowing, okay, if I do this, that means routing is going to converge or there'll be a new root bridge or whatever it is. And you kind of know in your head what it's going to be and what the end result's supposed to be, where that was what you did. That was how it worked, versus now we can automate all of this stuff and get a result set back of tests that have been run to validate that my change is working. And so it becomes a problem of the tools getting in the way. I used to do this in my head and I got to use a tool for this now. How does that work? Oh, I don't want to know. And you kind of run away scared unless the solution's there for you.
Yeah. And that's exactly it, right? Because once you start sitting down, because then you're faced with like another huge mountain to climb. You're like, okay, if I'm going to validate this, do I write this in code or do I do it natively in the operating system? What code do I select? Does the data I get back, is that going to be screen scraped or will it be structured data like JSON or XML that I can interpret and then read? Like that is an entire series of thoughts that like we talked about earlier, which is like boring stuff. You're like, oh God, it's the exact same thing that you probably went through when you start at the start, where you're like, are my variables going to be stored in flat files or in a NetBox database, right? Like you literally seem to have this like design conversation at every step in the automation journey, right? Which can really bog down the adoption of this truly like highly productive technology. And you know, our goal here is to try and demystify, but also just say, yeah, there's probably a lot of different ways you can do this. Here's the way that is probably the evenest balance between easy to use and most scalable that we're giving away for free. Absolutely, we are open to conversations about why some of the decisions we made may not be the most scalable or may not be the most easy to use. Let's have a conversation about it, right? But you know, I don't think that there's anything out there really in parallel to this that kind of draws that line in the sand, like I was saying earlier, and says, here's what we believe, right?
A lot of what's out there are more commercial products that I can think of that will most closely compare with this. But, you know, back to your point of tooling being in the way as you're getting started with this. I'm facing secrets management as a problem that's cropped up in my world right now. It's like, how am I going to most, you know, really securely manage my secrets? Because passing them in an environment variable, maybe that's not going to really scale the way I want. It's time to have a grown-up solution. So anyway, just an illustration. All right. So if I want to use this thing, we've talked about it being an open source project. I mean, how do I use this? Do I download some code? Is there a documentation? Is there a process?
All the above. So everything lives on GitLab. So, you know, links in the notes. But you can see everything on GitLab. We have some rough stuff in the repos. We're building longer form kind of official documentation and contributing guides, because again, it's open source. You know, we want folks to contribute to this if they think that that would be useful. But then because it's all just based on Ansible, which is free, it's based on our VM Cumulus VX, which is free. You can just take it, download it, and run it on your laptop. Or we have a service called Cumulus in the Cloud, which is basically just virtual labs. So you can go and launch a virtual simulation of Cumulus devices. You know, you click a button, 2 or 3 minutes later, we give you, you know, 15 devices and some servers, and you can click another button and deploy one of our demos. You know, you get to choose which demo, and boom, it's there, running, configured, and everything. And look, you can go and change it and break it and modify it and do whatever you want there.
Is this project interesting to me if I'm not a Cumulus customer?
I think it is, because you can go and use it as a way to see some Ansible best practices. You can understand some things like, okay, I've seen the like draw two circles Jinja template. What does the rest of the OWL look like in a Jinja template when it gets a little bit more complicated? You know, there's going to be some config translation where, look, we do some things a little bit differently than, say, Cisco or Juniper does. But I think any, you know, thinking network engineer can look at two different vendor configs and be like, oh, that's a bridge. A bridge is the same thing as a VLAN or an SVI. Got it. So you can definitely use that as a reference or just as a sandbox to play around in and just, like I said, spin up one of our virtual environments for free and just poke at it and kind of get your feet wet with something that is Ansible that you might not otherwise have access to.
What's interesting is if I'm a person who's so hung up on individual device configuration and I love to do a show run and see the paragraphs and stanzas that have been lovingly crafted by me and it makes me happy. Do we now begin to see as an industry that that doesn't matter so much, you know, because if you can automate away all that tedious stuff and the system just works, sure, you still want a little bit of knowledge there, obviously, right? But when you can automate away some of that tedium, what you've been lovingly typing all these years maybe doesn't matter as much as we thought it did.
You know, what's funny about that is I agree with the statement, but what we've done is when we actually run our automated tests and they all pass, we actually collect the show run from every device and push it back into the repo.
Yeah.
So that way as a human, you could be like, okay, what did this generate? Or like, what is my reference show run if I need to look at it in 30 seconds, as opposed to trying to decipher, you know, what will Ansible compile for me? So the show run still exists and they're actually there. You can see exactly what we generate on every build.
So you can be as nerdy as you want. Yeah. You don't have to, but it is there.
Yeah, I definitely want to add something there. And I think you hit on something really critical, Ethan, that I love that Pete brought up. It's the fact that there's still a social psychology. There's still a human psychology aspect to all this, you know, and until we get to, you know, Ray Kurzweil's, unification of all total minds in, in infinite continuum, I don't think we're going to get to a point where we're not going to get comfortable running Shorun on a box, right? I think there's still a lot of comfort knowing that when you created a config, regardless of how it was generated from either automation by hand, through some SDN orchestrator, doesn't matter, that somewhere on the box, you have some failsafe that you can log in and you can run a show run and kind of dump out what is this box currently configured to do, right? And I think that will never, I don't think that's going away in the near future, right? And I think there's a big component of all this where you have to blend together the fact that humans still have a certain comfort level with doing configurations or network management a certain way, right? What we're trying to do is get rid of the stuff that's wicked and unproductive, right? And then leave it as kind of left to the reader to validate rather than making it natively part of the workflow itself, right? And that's why I don't think we want to get rid of showing a show run away from people, to be honest.
I don't think we want to get rid of it, certainly not at this point because of the cultural reasons that you just suggested. But I do think long term that is where we want to go, where we're trusting some kind of an orchestrator or a policy engine that gives us a topological look at what the network is and what it's doing. And we can trust that just as much as we trusted logging into a device and doing a show run. That's where I think ultimately we want to get to, where we understand how telemetry is working and how we're getting feedback from the devices and looking at the network as a whole. And no, we're not there today, but I think over time, we're going to start getting familiar enough with automation tooling and how to look at the network in that way, using metrics coming off of the network and the network devices, that we will see the network that way. And that'll be the way to do things in the long term. And logging into the device and doing a show run, that's going to be like, crap, man, I don't know what else to do. Something's wrong. I guess I'll log into the device like a caveman and see what's going on in there, see if I can figure out this problem.
You know, it's funny when we first started doing this and collecting the show runs, like every build we'd look at it and be like, what did it build? What did it generate? What's going on? Like, I got to know. And then you just stop looking and it keeps collecting. And you're like, oh yeah, those are there. I forgot. Like you kind of evolve your thinking beyond looking at that component. And so just like you said, you start by doing the same thing as always, looking at that show run and logging into the device. And then you evolve to say like, oh, well, you know, I have a pretty good idea based on the telemetry or the output or the whatever. I don't need to do that anymore unless something's really sideways. Mm.
So what's next for this project, guys? It's open source. You've published it. It's at a, we can use it now, but I'm assuming there's roadmap for it.
Yeah. I should probably publish the roadmap, but we're looking at basically extending into, you know, what do data center and network operators need and want on top of this? Of course we're going to do the shiny and look at streaming telemetry with Prometheus. We're working on that right now. But at the same time, we're working on, full comprehensive SNMP configurations, because everybody likes to talk about the telemetry piece, but the reality is everybody still has, Zabbix somewhere. So that's one piece we're working on.
SNMP is with us for the foreseeable future. It may well be a heritage protocol, but it's going to be in every building going forward, you know?
That is so sadly true. I feel we need like a moment of silence for that sad state of being.
That's the reality. It's just going to be the way we're going to be working until eventually the heritage tools fade away and we move to the more modern way. But that's nothing in network changes in a hurry.
So. Exactly. And I think our view on this is very pragmatic. Like, it's no use to just build the shiny. We also have to build the practical. So the next one is, after that's going to be Ansible Tower or AWX, the open source version. So look, Ansible's great and there are these playbooks and there's all these things, but some people just want to click a button and a GUI. We get that. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be there. We're going to do things. Cumulus started doing stuff in campus. So you're going to see us expand out and do 802.1x, production ready automation to build that campus network as well. And really, we see every solution that is common to our customer base that solves problems as a candidate for being pushed into this and letting this grow over time.
Yeah, and I think that there's two ways that Pete really talked about this growing, right? One of them is adding more features to our existing architectures, right, to make them more complete, right? Things like SNMP and et cetera. And then the other one that he talked about is the additional architectures, right? You know, we do have a subset of customers. It's not the vast majority, but that are trying what we call like a pure layer three network, which means that the top of rack switches do route peering to the actual servers themselves, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. not yeah. everyone's doing it because it has some, you know, architectural commitments you have to, you know, commit to at the start of the design phase on the server side. And sometimes it's feasible, sometimes it's not. But if you can, you get a very clean, nice network that can do that. But in order to do that, we have to have confidence and comfort pushing some of those routing and network configs to an actual server running, you know, normally Linux, but sometimes, you know, ESXi or something else, right? And so, you know, these demos coming down the road, you know, in the future is another big thing because it shows that this automation, and then we talked again at the start, has a lot of that flexibility where it can go beyond just a pure network, right? It allows us to also start being able to speak the same language as application and server teams in their management infrastructures.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for sharing production-ready automation, at least the concepts behind it, what this open source project is that Cumulus is putting out. I get this, having been sitting and writing my share of artisanal Python to do this and to do that, to have a, I don't know, I talked at Interop some years ago about the need for modularity and how much simpler it's going to make automation. And I'm seeing a number of solutions, including this one, start to take us down this road, which is, it's kind of a big deal and kind of necessary. So I'm very happy to see that happening. Glad that you guys have open sourced this. So how can people find out more about this production-ready automation from Cumulus? What pages would you direct people to?
The easiest one to tell over a podcast, like I said, we'll have some more links in the show notes for y'all. But cumulusnetworks.com/CITC, Cumulus in the Cloud, CITC. You can go stand up that virtual lab, play around with it, and there'll be some links there that'll take you to the repo where you can actually see the code and get some more information.
Got it. cumulusnetworks.com/CITC, as in Cumulus in the Cloud. Now, you guys are both a little bit social, so Rama, can people follow you on Twitter? Any other way that you'd like people to get in touch with you if they have questions?
Yeah, no, Twitter's perfect. I'm also on the public Slack channel, so my Twitter handle is @radar_bot, right? I'm going to be out there. I don't have a ton of followers, but I am more than eager to get involved, right? But I'm also pretty active on the Cumulus Networks public Slack, which is cumulusnetworks.slack.com, so feel free to join that as well.
Perfect. Same question to you, Pete.
So you can find me frequently complaining and posting on Twitter @PeteCCDE.
Lovely. And thank you both for being on the show today. And thank you to Cumulus Networks for sponsoring here at Packet Pushers, because without our sponsors, we can't do what we do, creating professional career development content for you as an IT professional. If you like shows like this, well, you can find this and many more fine free technical podcasts along with our community blog that is people like you writing how-tos and explaining how they're solving problems. That's all over at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter @PacketPushers. We're on LinkedIn. You can like us on Facebook. You can rate us on Apple Podcasts if you'd like. We love those 5-star ratings. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.